All right, so today, folks, welcome back. Today is, let me think now, today is September 19, 2022. And today I'm excited to be joined by Corey Douglas Favelle from the Toronto area, I believe, here in Canada. And Corey and I have never spoken until just a few minutes ago before we did this, but we do know each other from social media. And I've been impressed with some of the things that I've seen that he's doing. He's working with younger athletes. He's having some good success. And of course, from the posts, I could see that he's a guy who's smart and thinking and using a logical approach to what he's doing. We were discussing just before we got on. I thought he was much younger than he is. And I, again, when I first saw him, so just the other day, I seen him celebrating his 50th birthday. And to me, it looks like he's about 32. So kudos to him and good genes and giving a good lifestyle. So as I said, I don't know a whole lot. Can you just tell us a little bit about your background? Not just, you know, where you're from originally and whatnot, but you mentioned your sports background, exercise background, and how you came to where you are today.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on, Richard, and thank you for those compliments. It's nice to hear. Like I said, the what I noticed back when I was about 18, 19 years old, as I was a hockey player, and I, you know, I wanted to play in the NHL, but around 18, 19, I realized I wasn't a very big guy. Strength training wasn't part of my routine. I was very fast on land. I couldn't figure out why I wasn't very fast on ice. So little things like that is what really intrigued me into.
So just to cut in for a quick second, did you play at the junior B level?
I didn't. I tried out for junior B. I ended up, the one year I was going to go play junior B in Stony Creek, I ended up going to Niagara College, and they had a hockey program. I was a Division III. So I ended up playing hockey first semester at Niagara College, and that's when I realized I was playing with some big boys, and I was just one of the hardest working players with no fear. And that was, you know, when you're 155 pounds and now you're facing guys 200 pounds, it wasn't I was going slowly going down. I kind of saw the end of the road there, and I knew.
So just, and sorry for cutting in again, but just for non-Canadian people, the NHL, typically the step before the NHL would be junior B, or people are now coming in from college hockey as well. Is that correct?
College hockey is a big feeder system now to the NHL. Now, the Ontario Hockey League, junior A, is a big stepping stone as well into professional hockey. So I would say we go with the NHL, you'd have the AHL, the American Hockey League, you'd have the East Coast League, you work your way down. But major junior hockey, junior A is the big level here. That's something I really, the US route really extends kids' career as far as maturity and maturing as a player. They really push for college. Here in Canada, I found a lot of players giving up at 17, 18 because they didn't make it to the major junior level. Where in the US, at 20 years old, you're just starting as a freshman and you have 4 years of college hockey to become a more mature and a better player. Sometimes you're just not a big, strong man at 18 and can step into that game playing with men. And it goes back to the stronger kids can compete at that level at a younger age. Sometimes it takes a little longer to mature and get a little stronger and to get to that level, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. But
worst case scenario, you're getting an education.
100%. And that's what I really push is if you're a really good hockey player, the U.S. really focuses on Ontario because they really like the product we produce here as hockey players. So that's where I started trying to open kids' eyes up to the U.S. route, which extends, you know, it gives you a lot better opportunity where you see a lot of guys now coming out of Division I and stepping right into the NHL, right? So
So sorry, I took you off on a hockey tangent there, but
yeah, I know. But that's it. And like I said, my father was a professional hockey player. So that was kind of my background. I grew up around the NHL, almost like the strength training community. When I started on my journey to strength training and muscle physiology and exercise physiology, you kind of meet with the same people at the top. In the hockey world, when you get to the top, there's a tight knit family of people that I know and that helped me out and want to help these kids out. So I kind of, you know, focused on that area with helping the kids, but also in the strength training community, it's the same way as you start to really educate yourself. You find, you know, the Michael Petrellas and you go down the muscle physiology rabbit hole with Arthur Jones and, you know, there's lots of really, really smart, interesting guys I met along the way that really helped educate me. Right. And like I said, I was a little older when I kind of put everything aside and really wanted to jump into the strength training community. And that's when maybe 5 years ago, a doctor had called me and said, listen, I know you do a lot of stuff in the gym with players. I have a technology that I think you might be interested in. And when I went in to check out this technology, there was a strength coach in the lab, and it was a performance lab. And his name was Kerry Guerin. And he, very educated man, taught me so much, really opened my eyes up. And first thing he did to me was he gave me this book. And he said, go read this book. And it changed the game for everything that I do, my whole, you know, methodology. But Kerry was a very educated guy who I didn't have.
Just
sorry, go ahead.
Really quickly, because this will be on a podcast as well without video. So just the book that Corey brought up was Body by Science by Doug McGuff and John Little. So go ahead.
Yeah. And that's, I didn't really have the time at my age. I was, say, 40, 43, 44. I didn't really have the time to go back to a university or a college and join the exercise, program, exercise science programs. But Kerry was so educated. He'd been through all that. And with his knowledge, him and I worked together and I absorbed so much from Kerry that when we kind of ventured on to our own separate directions, he was a guy who really influenced me he gave me that book, Body by Science. He was really, really tight with John Little. So after that, that's when I bought into the technology that I use, the ARX adaptive resistance machine. And that's where I kind of evolved and started changing the game and getting into the one set to failures and the data. And it was just game changing. And like I said, just from younger athletes, just teaching them proper form, them seeing their outputs and the real-time feedback data. It was almost like a video game to them. And it was my job to control them and get them to use the proper muscles to get that high score. So when I was introduced to that, that's when I really started going down the rabbit hole of muscle physiology. And I find the Michael Petrellas and the Doug McGuffs and yourself. That's where I was, really excited when I tapped into what you were doing. And you talk about the younger athletes. I have some, I don't want to say older clients, but some clients my age and up that really see great progression and they understand, they get it. And I get great results out of people my age and up. And that's why myself, with the training, is I train once a week for 25 minutes. Sometimes I'll do twice a week, 45 minutes at the most, but that's all I need, right? And people can see, no, you must be doing tons of cardio. And I say, well, strength training is cardio. So, I just try to educate people that are just putting so much stress on their hearts and overtraining that it doesn't have to be that hard. And you can get great results if you really just, stick to...
Now, are you doing, is exercise instruction your full-time occupation, or is this something you're doing on a part-time basis? You're doing it full-time?
I do it full-time. Yes. Yeah.
Now, I saw a post, I remember a while ago, where I think your ARX and you were situated in I don't know if it was a big box gym, but a public gym. And then there was some changes that took place shortly after that, or?
Yeah. So I have moved around a little bit. A friend of mine, Brad Anderson, when I started and I invested in the ARX and my strength training program, Brad Anderson was running a local gym here, Energy Fitness. It's family run by the Nitsopoulos family, great people. They gave me an opportunity and said, listen, we love what you're doing. You know, we'll give you a spot in the gym. So they gave me a small little performance lab in the middle of the gym. And that's where I got to experiment with watching what goes on outside in a gym, as opposed to my methods and what I'm doing inside the performance lab inside the gym. And like I said, I had Kerry Guerin with me, who would just educate me every day. We'd sit and we'd watch and I'd learn from, you know, everything that he was talking about. And eventually what really happened was I loved it. I was doing great. It was perfect. And then I don't want to get too into it, but the mandates came along and the mandates kind of shut everything down. And that is where I sort of transitioned out of the gym into a rehabilitation center. When the gyms are shut down, after a while, I kind of explained to him, said, listen, I have a lot of money invested in my machine and my technology. I really need to help these people. I don't think, restricting movement is the way to go. So I brought the machine to my garage and, Jeff Gamble and Paul Skiba, who own Niagara Health and Rehab Center, called me up and gave me another great opportunity to start out now in a physio setting. So I went from the gym to the physio setting only because kind of the mandates. But once I got into that physio setting, you know, the technology was built for, you know, physio. It was a great, great setting. It was a great atmosphere. I had, you know, some other equipment that I could really utilize. And I was in a real great spot and a great home there. Unfortunately, again, they kept putting some more restrictions on the strength coaches. And so what I did is I'm a dual citizen. So I took my machine and I went to the US to work for a bit and train some people in the United States and kind of came back and forth. And, I really wanted to get situated down in, the Jersey, Pennsylvania area. But like I said, I have five kids. And it was just, I couldn't be down there that long. It was just, it was heartbreaking. I was missing the kids. So I came back and set up in my garage and it was good. Like people were coming to my house and I was just glad I could keep helping people. And I was glad people were coming and understanding that, my methods seemed to kind of work. I remained very healthy through through the pandemic and through the mandates. And I think people started to clue in was, okay, this guy's methods maybe aren't madness. Maybe he is onto something where you don't have to run around a gym for 45 minutes a day. And
just, So for people, you and I, and many of the people who will watch this will immediately know what an ARX machine is. But yeah. Many people listening to this will have no idea what we're talking about. So could you explain for viewers who are not familiar, what an ARX machine is?
So the ARX machine is it's a company out of Austin, Texas. Like I said, 5 years ago when this doctor called me to come in and check out, he had purchased the ARX machine. He wasn't a strength coach, but Kerry was the strength coach there and brought me in. And Kerry was going to train me. I was using traditional weights out in the gym. And so I went in one day and Kerry put me on the machine and it's adaptive resistance. It's hooked up, especially almost hooked up like a winch system, but it's the software and the biofeedback. You can see each rep eccentrically, concentrically. You can see your outputs, which is your weight, total weight versus time. You can see your intensity, which is your average weight versus time. And it was tracking everything. But what I found was I was controlling the weight. So it was completely safe, but I was maximally loading. So on the AirX machine, it allows you to maximally load each way, eccentrically and concentrically, safely. You control the movements because there is no weights, there's no gravity involved. I did a horizontal press, and within two reps, it blew my mind. I didn't know what was going on. I was like, holy geez, it feels like I've done like 7 or 8 reps already, and I'm starting to shake, and I couldn't, you know, I couldn't handle 4 or 5 reps. And I said, I'm sold. Like, I signed up, give me 10 sessions. I put the weights down. I went in, I did once a week for 8 weeks, and I doubled my strength and my body composition. I was never a real, you know, didn't do a lot of legs on legs day. But the belt squats and the leg press, I could see my quads forming. I could see the definition of my body changing just by doing these 5 compound movements. I was sold. So a couple months down the road, I went out and I invested in my own machine. I loved it so much. I was like, this is a game changer. So I invested in my own machine, started my own little practice. And yeah, so ARX is, it is hard to explain. My son tries to get guys at parties. Yeah. They try to explain what goes on, and you almost have to experience it.
So my understanding, and I've been on one once, for like one set, back when I went to a conference in Minnesota, I think now 2019, and the ARX guys were there and they had the machine. They were letting us test drive it.
Yep.
So it has a motor, and the carriage goes back and forth at a predetermined speed, regardless of what I do. I can't push it to make it go faster, and I can't slow it down on the way down. And of course, an adaptive resistance. I don't know if you know the name Randy Reinfleisch.
Yes, I am friends with Randy. Yes.
So Randy, you know, he talked about, rather than adaptive resistance, him and I both thought maybe a better description would be accommodating resistance.
100%.
Because, you know, the harder you work, the harder it'll come back. But basically, as you said, in any machine or barbell or whatever it is, there are easier parts and harder parts to the repetition. But of course, some machines are designed better than others to even that out. But with an ARX machine or similar, at any point in time, you're always, if you choose to, working as hard as you can. So your fatiguing happens very quickly.
Yes.
Because there's no parts of the rep where you're resting or anything.
No, not at all. Like, as I say, if you're going to work hard, might as well come work hard for those, you know, those 6-7 reps. Like, once you break those fibers down, move on, right?
So let me ask you a little bit of a technical question. As I've looked at those machines, and when I tried it, I'll use the example on a leg press or the hip belt squat.
Yes.
As you come close to full extension, you have leverage to your advantage, so that if you're really pushing as hard as you can at that point, you're able to create enormous amounts of force. Even if you're, you know, not a superhuman strong person, just leverage makes it so that you're able to really push hard when you're getting close to full extension. Now, do you coach people to sort of be careful at that point so that they're not potentially, I'm thinking about if you were in a hip belt squat, might be less of a thing, but in a seated press down, I'm thinking you could really be pushing your pelvis hard into the back of the seat. Is that a concern, or am I imagining that?
No, you're not imagining anything. You're bang on. The first thing that I realized when I was working with the ARX machine is I always run in manual. So there is a manual mode where I use the controller. I control the machine all the time. It's never free moving. I found that was just a better way to connect. It was a lot safer. So, example, that belt squat. I control every movement. Everybody's body is different. Everybody reacts differently to it. Like you said, you really can put on a lot of force, which I found on the belt squat what I did was, because I manually control it, I leaned them back a bit and gave them some handles, wouldn't let them come to lockout or full extension. I do give them a little rest at the top because you are loaded at the hips, but because I'm controlling it manually, I can work with the client. So if they're fatiguing a bit, the problem was with once you start fatiguing, you're calling on all the other muscles, your form starts to go out the window. And that's where, if I'm controlling it, okay, we're done. We're now, you know, we're getting into a zone where, yes, you're cheating a bit. You are trying to not lock out, but you're using that force of the seat, or you're using the handles that you're leaning on that belt squat. I eliminated all that by just running in manual. Keep it running in my manual mode. I control that motor all the time. That's where I really, like you said, you were bang on with, you know, my concerns were that belt squat coming into lockout or full extension. That does not happen on my machine or with my methods, because I control everything manually. Right. And it is like I said, in the seated leg press, yeah, you almost feel like you're in a trash compactor. But if you have someone there coaching you and controlling you, it makes it a lot safer. I train myself in automatic. I'm an experienced guy, I know, but sometimes I wish I had someone there controlling it, because right. I need a 2 second little rest in between that rep, because I'm fatiguing and I'm, you know, my form's, you know, breaking a little bit. So that's why I really, really went for the manual. Now, love AirX to death, but they really, really pushed me towards the automatic, where I wouldn't go into automatic mode. There's just such a good connection controlling that machine with your client. It's so much safer. I have no worries on any of the movements with the belt squats and any of that with any types of injuries. It's not 100% foolproof, but coaching is a very big variable in part to that puzzle.
You're speaking very well to the value of a good instructor, right? Whether it's with ARX or with anything at all, right? Because sometimes people think, you know, you just make the weights go up and down, or you make the carriage go up and down, and some sort of magic automatically happens. But as you know, you've heard guys like Drew Bay and others say, it's not necessarily the machine or the equipment you're using, it's the manner in which you're using it that makes all the difference. Now, one thing I'm interested in, when you talk about athletes and working with them, and before we started recording, you know, we talked about how you might have experienced a little bit of an uphill climb. You know, when I find part of the reason my clientele does tend to be older, might have something to do with the color of my hair too, that younger people often think they already know it, right? And they're less open, whereas a lot of the people that are older are not interested. They have different goals.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I think of athletes and some of the things that athletes are being asked to do, and I always think of somebody once said to me, you know, what you do is good for old people. And they meant it as a compliment. But I thought, yeah, but young people, you know, those aches and pains, I would be willing to wager you have a few aches and pains that you can pinpoint back to things you did that you wish you hadn't have done in your teens and in your 20s.
Exactly. The same with Roger Schwab, big mentor of mine. Great story with the connection with him. But same thing. When I was working out in the factory on our lunch hours, we'd have half an hour. We'd go down to the gym. I injured myself. I went out on a stretcher. I couldn't move my back. I was using barbell, stand-up row. And I had a bulging disc in my back, and it injured me. So I had to really reevaluate what I was doing. And that was, you know, same with kind of Roger was injured with the, you know, the barbell, and I had to change my methods. And when I changed my methods, I was still getting great results, if not a little bit better. With the safety, right? So yeah, my back, I've never had an issue with my lower back, because I'm very careful. I've separated my shoulder a couple of times playing hockey, but with my training, I've never had an issue. I just, you know, I really feel strongly that you know, you can you can strengthen and bring that stuff back without the weights and the gravity that might irritate it, right?
Well, so one of the things that boggles my mind is how readily people accept being injured as part and parcel with working out. In some cases, it's even worn as a badge of honor. You know, they'll bring it up as a social setting. You know, oh yeah, my shoulder's a bit out because I was doing some bench, and I'm hoping that I'm working with a physio right now, and next week I'm thinking I'm going to go back and see if I can't get a new personal best.
Yeah, and they'll be right back where they started again, right? That's, you know, like I said, I get the best results, and I love working with, you know, my older clientele, because they get great results and they see it and they understand. You know, I had a guy here, a friend of mine yesterday, who's, you know, always been in very good shape, but, you know, 30 years later, he needs to start doing something. So we said, well, you know, my shoulder, I'm like, just sit back, relax, focus on the chest, and, you know, just do what you can and we'll ease into it. And by the end of it, his chest is fully fatigued with no discomfort in his shoulder. Same with knees, the way I can, I can perform isometrics and statics with the belt squat and stuff, which takes a lot of that load off your knees and targets the muscles, right? So my older clients who do have some of those injuries, my dad, 77, played in the NHL for 12 years. He's had a million surgeries.
Your dad is Doug?
Doug is my dad, yes.
Right, okay, right.
So, but a guy like that, they realize, you know, they don't hit the golf ball 300 yards anymore. So a little something like that, when he comes in, well, he's had, you know, three knee surgeries, back surgeries, shoulder surgeries, he's basically put back together, but the workout doesn't irritate any of those joints or tendons. And he can actually work on getting a little bit stronger at his age. Right. So that's what I loved about it. I love training the kids. I love, you know, it's a little more challenging with them. I like my older clients because they're a little more fun to work with. They're a little, they like to listen and they understand. And
I'll tell you a little story. When I first started my business, there was a local quasi-government thing that would give new businesses a little grant, and you went for sort of an 8-week small business course and things like that. And I went to that. And there was a young man there who had just graduated from university, and I think kinesiology or something like that. And he runs a business not too far away from here. And his business consists of taking, you know, gifted youngsters and helping them, coaching them so that they can get either, you know, scholarships or things like that. And some of the things he does is quite good. Like, he'll help them with the studying and things like that, so they don't neglect their academics and all this. But one of the things that he said, because of course he's got people, I see his website from time to time, he's got 10-year-olds doing clean and jerks and snatches and things like that, right?
Yeah.
And I heard him, you know, I was talking one day about safety, and I didn't want to get into, you know, a heated debate with him type of thing. And I was talking about safety and whatnot. And his view was, you know, I can't live my life like that, fearing injury all the time. You know, and he tells the athletes, if you aspire to be a high level of athlete, you have to expect to be injured and not get discouraged when you do and work your way back. And that boggled my mind that basically it's accepted as,
exactly.
I mean, certainly if you're playing hockey or football, you know, but, you know, it should be, and it certainly shouldn't be hurting yourself in the weight room. And yet that mentality.
Yeah. And that's why some of the organizations, you know, I'm not the most popular guy with some organizations, but I'm all about preventing injuries. And that's totally wrong that you should accept an injury. And yes, I understand that injuries are part of the game. And that's mentally, when you get hurt, you mentally need to overcome that. You shouldn't be getting hurt. My methods are strength trained, so we prevent injuries.
Right.
Just accepting an injury and I mean, we could go on and on. I'd never want to discredit anybody and their methods, but there's a lot of misinformation out there, and there's a lot of kids going through routines that just you know, in 10 years, you know, do battle ropes for 10 years. I don't think your shoulders are going to like it that much. Put, you know, the stronger these kids get, the more weight they have to squat, the more weight they're putting on their spine. I don't, you know, in the long run, when your career is over, you want to be able to still run around and shoot hoops and, you know, pick up your grandchildren and, you know, I'm 50 and I can still outrun my kids back and forth to the park. Right. So that's.
So do you think part of that is the organizations like professional sports and things like that? They don't exist for the benefit of the athlete.
They
exist because, yeah, you know, they're money-making things. And of course the goals are about, what do we do to win a championship this year? Yeah. What do we do to help this athlete win a medal the next time? So they don't have a long range view about, okay, I want this person to be able to age gracefully and not have a walker when they're in their 70s. It's about just, how do we get them to, you know, win the championship this year?
Yeah. And that's where I go back to is I'm all about the player. I'm not about the team. I really love helping teams, like, you know, but the coaches and those people, they want the team to win. They're not super interested in, you know, developing the player. They want to develop the team. Right. So that's kind of where I bang heads with some people, is I'm all about the player. Right. So I want that player to develop and that player to, you know, not get injured, or, you know, I want him to succeed.
But ironically, your way will achieve both better, won't it?
It will. But like I said, it's, you know, trying to reinvent that wheel with some of the organizations. Some organizations are amazing. They're about development. There's a junior B team here, the Welland Canadians, Dave Burkholder. He's done a lot of stuff for some players that I come in and, you know, that come in from other countries, and he gives them an opportunity. And he brought up a kid last night, Carson Dickinson, you know, an up and coming prospect, brought him up at 15 years old to develop him, put him out with, you know, a 4-4 game. He had him on the ice with a minute and a half left because he believes in the kid and he wants him to develop. He's, you know, that showed me is this guy really cares about his players. Right. And he wants him to develop. And success will come with that. I believe, but there's some organizations that just, you know, they own the team, they own the gym, they own, you know, they're in charge. And that's what I'm saying, is I don't think 13, 14 year old kids should be loading up with weight doing group training when there's no one-on-one coaching with proper form, because kids are, you know, at that age, you're, you know, there's a difference in height and weight and experience. Everyone's kind of a beginner, but everyone's kind of using the same weight and stations. And I just found, you know, that may be, you know, not the best method. So I just kind of stick to what I do and kind of stay in my lane, I guess.
So you probably also know Blair Wilson.
I don't know Blair Wilson, no.
Oh, so Blair Wilson owns MedX Precision Fitness in Toronto.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
Actually, he's just recently moved back here, but he's still going to be going back and forth. So Blair used to be with John Little.
Okay,
and, yeah. And he also played some hockey. Actually, he was a professional water skier as well. They were talking, and I don't know if this is embodied by science, about training hockey players during the season and using bod pod and whatnot, basically saying that between all the games and the practice and everything else, that there simply wasn't enough recovery ability left over to do a whole lot, if any, strength training during the regular season, because, you know, they're being pushed so far.
100%, bang on. Three years ago, I did a study. I had five 15-year-old hockey players. I trained them all summer and I had their data. I knew exactly their strength gains. Once the season started, they had a mandatory in-season program. And I thought, okay. So I talked to the coach and I said, listen, can I give me these five players? I can't have them in two strength training programs in season. Give me these five and I want to gauge through the season how their strength is going up and down. And using the ARX, I could gauge all that. So it was a great study because 2 to 3 weeks in, they're already starting to dip. Well, you know, now school starts. When the hockey season starts, school starts. I'm all about recovery. And, you know, all of it. So when you have to get up early in the morning and go to school, now you have school activities after school. Now you have hockey. Now you come home, you have to do homework. Your recovery is not there. And I started seeing it right away. By Christmas, they were gassed. They were drained. Guys who could do 2,000 pounds in 90 seconds on a belt squat were doing about 1,200, right? And that's just fatigue. That's just lack of recovery. And they say by the end of the season, the players are skinny fat. We call them skinny fat because they just can't strength train during the season. But I found if they kind of followed what I was doing and we were watching and we had a good recovery program, we could maintain and we could keep that strength there right through the season. But I'm not a coach, and the coach, more is better. Parents want 5 practices a week, need 4 games a week. And the one coach is a good friend of mine, and he really worked with me. He was, Corey, take these 5 kids. You got them. I got your back. And when it came down into the end of February at the OHL Cup, the big tournament in Toronto, every scout's there. And after the first game, the coach came to me and he said, my guys are gassed. They can't even, like, I'm telling them, you're up. I can't skate, coach. I'm gassed. Like, they're done by the end of the season. And just during the season, the strength training programs they were on, they were doing front squats the night before games and stuff like that, where it just, that's where I kind of stepped back and said, okay, this is something we need to kind of fix. And if I can kind of, you know, get into these kids' heads early and show them, you know, recovery is huge. And they started seeing it because, so they have, like, they can see their outputs, right? So when a kid comes in and says, hey, how come I didn't do 2,000 pounds on my belt squat? So, okay, well, what, you know, let's go over the last 3 days. You know, let's go over what we ate. Let's go over when we slept. You know, were we up playing Fortnite all night? Like, and they couldn't believe that it came down to the one kid was nutrition. It was nutrition. He couldn't believe. I said, okay, eat this, this, and this. You know, let's go a week and then come back. Boom. He was back up there now because he was getting sleep. He was going to better, you know, he started focusing on his recovery and it made a world of difference. So kid like that at the end of the season, he's still going full bore where other guys are, they just don't have it. It's been a long season. The recovery is
makes you wonder whether, you know, there's a survival of the fittest kind of boot camp kind of thing where the guys who make it the NHL are the very few who are genetically blessed enough to deal with that kind of abuse. And still survive it.
Yeah.
And are lucky enough not to get injured along the way, because overtrained people, correct me if I'm wrong, got to be more susceptible to injury on the ice.
Well, that's, I think the science is pretty much there that, yeah, that's once those muscles fatigue, yeah, you're opening yourself up for injuries in those, you know, the MCLs and the, you know, the shoulders and that connective tissue, it weakens, right? It's the same with strength training. When, you know, these 3 sets of, you start at, you know, 100 pounds and then you go up to 120 on your second set. Now the third set, all right, now that we're fatigued, let's throw more weight on. So now we're really putting stress on our joints, tendons. And I was like, man, it's like I said, that slow one rep to failure and the methods that you and I use is game changing.
So it's interesting. And I confess that I haven't watched NHL hockey in a number of years, except every now and then when my Habs get into the playoffs, I'll start to watch during the playoffs to see how far they get. So that's not very often. Yeah. And, but I have a perception, and maybe I'm wrong because you may watch it more than me, is that the NHL season is so long that often I think some of the teams that do well is either some of their key players get injured early on in the season and miss a good chunk of the season and come back just before the playoffs long enough to get their timing back, and they're just fresher
Yeah.
At the end of the year. So the teams that win the cup are often the teams that are just healthiest, never mind that they're the better hockey players, they're simply healthier.
It's like I said, it goes right to the professional levels. When teams have, okay, we have a week off for the all-star break, say. Well, those all-star guys, they're not getting any rest, but all the other guys get to have a week off, right? So that's why the Ovechkins and these guys you're seeing, hey, I'm not in the all-star game this year. And because those guys that's a week of major recovery mid-season. And I found it with the kids here at Christmas time, when they go on Christmas holidays, the strength starts to bump up a little bit because they don't have to get up and go to school. They get a little more recovery, and they can see that a little bit of recovery goes a long way.
Right.
And no, I mean, this is great because you're so bang on even with everything you're saying.
So, all right. So I'm a new client for you, and I haven't trained before, or maybe I trained back when I was in high school. I'm 63 years old. I come in and you're going to start working with me. What frequency, volume, what would be my prescription? I know you'll change that depending on my initial results, but sort of a ballpark idea of where you'd start with me and what the frequency would be like.
We would start, like I said, we would do once a week. I start everyone kind of once a week to get a feel for, you know, how their body's adapting to the workout. With yourself, you would come in. I do everything 5 compound movements. I'd start you out. First, I'd find out about all your injuries or if you have any injuries or any discomfort anywhere. But I explain the machine, how it works. What we do is we start with, we would do a belt squat. I would walk you through a belt squat. We would do 90 seconds. I would move you up and down, get you used to that belt squat, get you using some of those muscles. Then we would move on to a seated row. We would do 90 seconds, which is about 7 seconds each way. So 7 seconds concentric, 7 seconds eccentric. With that, running around 90 seconds, you probably get about 5 reps. Then we would move on to a horizontal press. Again, 90 seconds, probably 5-6 reps, running at 7 seconds each way. Then we move on to, I like to throw in a tricep extension. So we get to stand up and face the other direction. We do a tricep extension. That one I'd run you for about 60 seconds. Triceps, you know, that very fatiguing. So 60 seconds, we'd probably do 3 reps. Then we'd go to a pull down. Basically, I'd get you performing a chin up. That is a little longer range of motion. People always dig in nice and low as we start our eccentric load, and they realize, "Ooh, I got long arms. I'm going way up." So the 7 seconds on the eccentric and the 7 seconds on the concentric takes you about to one rep takes you about 30 seconds because it's a long way up, long way down, right? So that one we'd go into the pull down, then we'd do an overhead press, and then we would finish with a final belt squat. Since you did it at the beginning, you'd be a little more used to it. And now you would see your strength curve on the belt squat. And I would run you for, on our final belt squat, I'd run you for 90 seconds, which would be about 6 or 7 reps, depending on your height, right? So
on that first workout, would you, how intense would the first workout be?
What I usually tell people is we're not here to break records. We're not, you know, trying to set world records on our, you know, our one rep maxes, but I want to get a nice smooth baseline from you. And starting with a nice smooth baseline, really not easier to progress, but you'll see a lot better results if you ease into it, and your body will thank you. Those joints and tendons will thank you easing into it. And that's where, again, I'm there controlling you because you're controlling the weight, you're controlling the movement. That's up to me to have you, you know, stay in control and not break form. And I do push you. So your full first workout on, say, on, you know, midweek would be probably 30 minutes full session, but you'd probably do about 10 minutes of exercise.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you questions that some of my newer clients ask me.
Yep. And
interestingly, One thing I'm really excited about, I recently got a new client who's 89 years old.
Beautiful.
And so he says, so I'm going once a week. He says, so what should I do in between? Have you got a routine that I can do in between? So so anyways, I won't tell you how I answered. I'll get you, how would you answer it?
That is a good question, because a lot of people do it, you know. Recovery gives you the time to kind of think about stuff. I looked at it as you're working out, you're going to be a little more, it gives you more time to eat, you know, just kind of watch your nutrition. But what I look at is it's all about recovery. So you train on a Monday, I follow up with you on the Tuesday, on the Wednesday, on the Thursday. I just say, and everybody's different. Do they have an active lifestyle? What are their daily routines? Sometimes, I mean, at, you know, 85 years old, 80 plus, probably not sitting at a desk all day, probably not, you know, a crazy, you know, crazy output during the day. But sometimes I just try to keep them active during the week. And maybe on that Friday, if, you know, if they feel good, they can come back in and we can do it again. But it's all about recovery and everybody's different. I just tell them to stay active and watch what's going in your body. Right. Yeah. And a lot of people do, oh, I can do three times. I want to do three times a week. And it's like, you know what? Let's relax. Let's just see. You'll see the progression once a week. And after a couple of sessions, people start to understand, oh, okay. I get it. Right. We're building the muscle. We're letting it recover.
One of my other new clients that I got, probably one of my younger ones, I think she's about 28.
Yeah.
And she asked me the same question. So I give her, you may have seen the video that Drew Bay created back during the pandemic, and it's called Table Workout for Seniors. And it's mostly time static contraction and whatnot. And the only thing that makes that workout for seniors, I'm using quotation marks here in the end for people listening, is because it doesn't require anybody to get on and off the floor, which for seniors, you know, mobility issues may make that less than desirable, but it's by no means an easy workout. As you know, if you've done time static contraction, I'm guessing you probably pepper that into your workouts. But then I seen her this morning and I said, so did you do that workout in between? And she said, no, I never got around to it. And I said, listen, you're coming once a week and you're getting stronger every workout.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you came and you weren't getting stronger because something's happening. And I know that there are some people, even in our community, if you will, who advocate twice a week as being superior to once. And I struggle with that because, first of all, as you stated, it's a case-by-case basis.
100%. Yep.
And but to me, there's no question that once a week, people will make progress. And as long as they're making progress, they're going in the right direction, they'll get there. Like you say, if you were, like maybe if, let's say you were training to be on a bodybuilding stage by next February.
Yep.
Maybe you would say, well, in order to be top then, what am I going to see if I can manage my recovery so well that maybe I can throw in an extra workout here or there to be really peaked at that point. But if your goal is simply to, you know, continue to be able to do what you're doing on an ongoing basis and eventually play with grandkids and stuff like that, you have no grandkids yet?
Not yet. No, I have grand dogs. That's it right now. So no grandkids
yet. Then who cares how quick the progress is as long as it's continuous? Does that make sense to you?
Makes total sense. Yep. And that's what I said. Continuous is... That's what I say, is just come once a week. And like I said, I have the advantage of, with my machine, showing real-time numbers of progression. So people start to understand, okay, I don't, you know, I train Monday, but on Wednesday, I don't need to go to the local gym or go to a spin class or, and you're right. Static contractions are amazing. I do a lot of that. If someone wants to do, you know, a second workout during the week, that's, we do mix it up a bit. We, you know, we can do some, isometrics, so you'd say. But yeah, the static contractions on the belt squats and the lower body, is everyone loves them here because you can see the, you know, you can see your numbers and you can see not your strength curve, but you can see that where you're holding the line and where you're progressing week to week, right? So
with the ARX doing such a great job of measuring things, I have a question for you, and I'm not going to tell you my experience because I don't want to taint your answer in any way.
Yep.
When you've had people who, for whatever reason, they had a cold, they went on a holiday, things got busy, and they don't see you for 3 weeks. Now, I'm not talking about someone who just started and had two workouts. Somebody that's been with you for a few months or maybe years.
Yep.
When they first come back, what is your experience of their results after not working out for 3 weeks or even a month?
I'll be honest with you. I do have a lot of clients who come back and are stronger. They can't figure it out, and it's the same thing every time. Oh, I was at the cottage. I didn't do anything for 2 weeks. I just sat on the dock, you know, whatever. And they start working out, and because they can see the real time numbers, it shocks them. They're like, "Whoa, wait a minute. Oh," I'm like, "Yeah, exactly." So your muscles are building. So that's why I get into the nutritional aspect. Is your muscles are still growing, but as long as you're taking care of it and putting in the right nutrition and keeping that caloric deficit, you're gonna see the results. Like after maybe 4 or 5 weeks, yes, it might, you know, you might see a bit of a decline, but that 2 to 3 week break, clients came back and they were a little bit stronger. So what was your answer? What's your answer?
Oh, the same. And what I do tell people is I prepare them as when you first come back, your perception of difficulty will be, you might feel like the first rep, like, oh, I don't know, this feels heavy. I don't know if I can handle this. Because your perception of difficulty, it's kind of like, you know, at one point, there's a psychological adaptation. When they first come in, they go, oh, man, this is hard work. And after a while, they come into a bring it on, I can do this.
Yeah.
And then if they're away for 3 weeks, it was like, oh, shit, I forgot how hard this is. But I say, hang in there. By the second or third rep, you'll find your groove. And they invariably, in my, matter of fact, I have a friend who, he doesn't have a regular time. Every now and then I think about it and I call him, and he often takes 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks between sessions.
Yeah.
And I always put the weight based on what his last performance was, regardless of how long it's been.
Yeah.
And he keeps progressing.
Yes. And you are so bang on with the hang in there till the second, third rep, because on my machine, and it's the same thing I hear every time, as we start moving into that first rep on that eccentric load, and then they start pushing on the concentric, I always hear, I think there's something wrong with the machine. It feels harder. Is something, you know, and I'm like, no, keep going. And it's the first rep that they see they're down a little bit. The second one, they start to battle back. And by the third rep, they're right in tune with what they were doing. So it's amazing that you call that out on, you know, that second or third rep. And that's exactly what I see every time. And they blame that's the first rep is something's wrong. The weight's off, something's up, it's harder or something, you know, but then once they make it through that first rep, they realize, whoa, wait a minute here.
The only small exception that I've heard, Michael Petrella has shared that if people have been away, the one muscles that tend to suffer is things to do with overhead presses. And his theory is that no matter how sedentary you are in between, you're using your legs and you're using other things to some degree, probably enough, just enough to maintain.
Yep.
Whereas overhead things, unless you're a painter or something,
Yeah.
There's not much reason to get your arms up over your head.
Yeah.
And so
that's totally true. I'd like to go back and look at, you know, I'm going to start to focus on that, but yeah, no, 100% you're definitely right. Michael's very, like, I love Michael and I love such a knowledgeable guy. And what I love about Michael, he never discredits anybody else. He knows what he does. He knows he's good at what he does. And I just, very smart individual. I just love how he'll never discredit anybody else, but he knows his beliefs and he knows what works, right?
So you talked about nutrition and helping people looking at their nutrition and whatnot. So what is it, would you be able to, as they say, standing on one foot, a general recommendation of what's good nutrition in your eyes?
I'm very paleo. I believe if it came from the earth, it belongs in your body. There's just so much junk and crap out there these days that if you can eat clean, I know it's not cheap, it's not easy. Prepping meals isn't the easiest. I'm a guy who, I have five kids, I'm a single parent. I don't have all the time in the world to sit and cook and prepare meals. And so what I tend to do is I'll, you know, instead of hitting fast food or restaurants, I'll go to the local market, I'll go to the grocery store, and I'll try to stay on that outside where the fruits and the vegetables and that stuff is. You start venturing in those aisles with the processed foods and the, and I just try to tell my clients, you know, less sugar, more fruit, you know, less alcohol.
Protein and encourage eating of meat, fish, and
Yes, I do. And I do break it down where with the workouts, you can see, I really, you know, like to educate kids on what your carbohydrates are, and your carbs are your fuel. You know, pre-workouts, pre-activities, pre-games, you need fuel in your system. So I believe in, you do need those carbs. Post-workouts, I like to tell kids now we're into recovery. So I will give them, you know, some education on what is your proteins. Here's your protein. So I am, you know, big on, you know, kind of breaking it down with, not so much younger guys counting calories, but your proteins and your carbs are very important during your workouts, and when to take them and when not to take them. And like I said, I'm very, you know, if it comes from the earth, I'm a very plant medicine guy. Like I said, I'm not vegan. I know a lot of athletes are, you know, they like plant-based stuff, but I believe, you know, your fish, your meats, that sort of natural proteins is something your body needs.
One thing I've noticed with older people, because, you know, I go back to, you're not actually that much younger than I am. you know, for the longest time, you know, muscle magazines would be selling protein, right? And protein was magic. And then, of course, the critics of that would say, you know, that's just, you know, a ripoff, and you're wasting your money, and you get all the protein you need from just eating chicken and fish and beef and stuff like that. And I sort of bought into the latter, and I still believe that's true. I think protein powders and things like that are more a matter of convenience than they are of necessity. Because I do both, although most of the time I'm very fortunate. My wife is an amazing cook, and she makes home-cooked meals every single day.
You're lucky. And,
but what I have noticed, though, is with older people, when I start asking them about what they eat, because I always thought, well, hey, you don't need protein powder. It's easy to get all the protein you need. So I just assumed from that most people got more than they needed. But I've realized there's a lot of people who don't eat nearly enough protein, because if you are in those middle aisles,
yeah.
A lot of those foods are really actually lacking in protein. Like I ask clients, what'd you have for breakfast? Well, I had a bowl of cereal. I'm going, yeah, all right. You know, that's other than oatmeal, I haven't had a bowl of cereal for breakfast in decades.
Exactly. And like I said, my dad's good friend, Rob Hawthorne, was president and CEO of General Mills, and they made cereals. You want to up the sales, just add more sugar, right? Just add more sugar to the cereals. You'll boost the sales up, right? So there's a lot of cereals. And like I said, we can get into the nutrition background, but there's a lot of crap. Even though it says protein, fiber, you know, pro checks or whatever, it's garbage, right? And that's just the reality of it. The food is just, it's not what it used to be. I looked at a picture from 1972 where there's a concert at the Spectrum in Philadelphia, and you look at the crowd and everyone going in, and then you look at a crowd from 2019, or the body composition, there is such a difference in those two photos. And I always said it's it's the food, right? Yeah. Not like they didn't exercise more back then. They didn't. It was the food. It's, you know, our food. Well,
one of the things I've found, and let me know if you've had better success. I mean, maybe if you're dealing with athletes who are motivated and whatnot, but I've found that I can control what people do for the half hour or 45 minutes they're with me, but I have virtually no control over what they do in when they leave, including nutrition. And I want to be careful too, because I don't want to lecture people, right? I want their experience when they come and see me to be a positive one. And if every time they come, they hear me say, you need to do something, need to lose some weight.
Yeah.
They're going to stop coming after all, because some of them, and in fairness, they're coming to see me to get stronger, right? I did one podcast with Dwayne Wimmer, and he said, listen, I'm not a dietitian. I have no business telling people about diet. He says, I just get them stronger. And then if they want to do stuff about diet, they can go see a dietitian. But to some extent, in the current atmosphere that we're in, where people are bombarded from every side with ads and foods and things like that.
Yeah.
It's really challenging for people to maintain a good body composition. They really have to work at
it. It really is. Like I said, it's, and I'm not a dietitian. I suggest things. I don't know if, little Timmy has a peanut allergy. I'm not going to tell him to go, eat peanut butter. It's a great fuel. I just kind of break down the carbs and the proteins for kids and kind of give them the, and even adults. My dad, same way, is, he's a professional athlete who, my dad's very educated, but you got to carb up before activities. And here's kind of a list of, I didn't know carrots were a carb. Oh yeah. Well, and here's your proteins posts, kind of keep those in order. That's, it's kind of a start. But yes, like I said, I don't specifically write out meal plans, or I don't tell you to eat this, eat that. I just kind of guide you along your way where you'll see the best results, which I see the results on my machine, which I get the best results is if, we do need to get some carbs in us for fuel, and proteins will help with that recovery.
So one of the things that I've come to believe in strongly is if you're already getting enough protein, whatever that is, won't go down that rabbit hole is how much is enough, but let's just, for the sake of the argument, say if you're getting enough, getting more isn't going to do much more. But if you're not getting enough, then that actually not only will affect your results, but it'll actually, especially for older people, affect your overall health.
Yep.
Because if you haven't got the building blocks to at least replace the breakdown that's happening, not only from your strength training, but just daily living, then your body is going to go and get that protein from other parts of your body.
Exactly. Yeah. And like I said, you want the proteins coming from your intake, your foods and that stuff, right? I have a jug of protein right here, but I don't think I haven't opened it in probably, maybe a month or two, but that's if I feel my nutrition that day, oh my gosh, I didn't get enough proteins. I'm not counting, hey, I need 50% protein, 20% carb. I just kind of know from my experience kind of where I'm at. And I have done tests where if I don't get my proteins, I'm not seeing the results that I should be seeing on my machine. Right. So it, there's benefits to the nutritional side and breaking it down and doing it properly. Right. So
who's the guy from McMaster University? I'm forgetting his name now. Phillips. I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Phillips. He's got some good stuff on protein, how much you need and things like that. So how many clients do you train, or how many sessions do you do per week, about roughly?
Right now, like I said, the last, up until all the mandates kind of hit, some days I was, my busy points, one day I had 15 clients. So I generally would try to keep it around 6 to 8 clients per day. Obviously that's my end all goal right now. I've kind of got it down to, maybe four clients a day. Always trying to build on that. But like I said, I'm just, you know, right now I'm kind of just working out of my home and trying to keep people, my clients, not necessarily all the athletes, but the people who can't be sitting at home. And, you know, my friend Gerald Major, he's one of my, a great client of mine, but he has thoracic arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis. He's a guy who needs to keep working out. Like he need, and he can't load those joints and tendons with weight. So my machine was, you know, was kind of a game changer for someone like that. So those are the guys I really try to focus on and keep them going. Right now, hockey in season. I don't want to see those kids every week if they have four practices, five games. So it, during the in season, yeah, the hockey players slow down. But like I said, since I've started, I've tracked and I've trained over 580 clients, and I've probably done over 7,000 workouts. So it's, I love how you can track that, because people ask me, well, you know, how many, what's your bad? Well, I've trained 580 clients and, you know.
Well, I envy, the thing about the ARX that I really like is I've got, you know, right behind my screen here, the spreadsheets. So I got everything on spreadsheets, and I put it on paper while I'm training people, then I enter it in a spreadsheet. The other thing I'm doing is I have hammer strength machines as well as Nautilus. Yep. With Nautilus, where you just change the pin and you change the seating. Yep. The hammer strength, though, you're hauling plates around.
Yeah.
And so there's a fair amount of work to get ready for clients in between. Yeah. Where it's on your ARX machine, if I understand correctly, it remembers
everything.
If I was on it, you'd just say, okay, punch in Rick. Here's Rick. You would know my seat setting and all that and automatically do it.
Yep. And one thing that I like to reiterate is I have the ARX machine. That's what I train with. But I'm not a guy who, I believe in, like Michael Petrella, his space there is just, it's a dream come true to me with the equipment he has. I am not a guy who's completely stuck to ARX. I know that that's not the be all end all. You need all the hammer strength and stuff like that. I started going to clients' houses and using their equipment, their Med-X equipment, right, their hammer strength equipment. And I would blow their mind just by changing the three set, you know, 8 to 10 rep, by just doing the slow controlled, even on the hammer strength, which, like, by, you know, even using 50 pounds when a guy can bench 160, using 50 pounds by the third rep, he's like, what's going on? Why am I shaking? And why am I struggling with this? And I'm like, that's perfect. That's exactly what I want to do. So I can get out of other equipment, which I said, Michael's place is amazing with the gluteator and all that stuff. There's just so much stuff that I love using my methods on other equipment that is, it's so beneficial. A lot of people sometimes get the ARX machines and they, hey, that's the be all end all. That's not my methodology. I see the advantages of all the other equipment. It's just how you utilize it, right? And how you use it.
Right. I mean, I'm quite sure that you'll agree with what I'm about to say, is if I put you in a desert island tomorrow with no equipment, you will still be able to work out and get good results just using body weight, finding a tree someplace to do some chins off of.
I'd be doing isometric static contractions. I'd be holding, I'd be leaning against the, you know, sitting in a squat for a minute, just holding that. There's so much you could do. Yeah, no, I know. That's
so, what would you like as I sort of get ready to wind things up? And afterwards, I'd like to stay on after I click off the record button to chat with you a bit more. But
sure.
What are things that I haven't asked you about that you feel it's important that listeners should know, either that I haven't asked or anything you want to reiterate or reinforce that we've already talked about?
I talk a lot and I go off and I talk about a lot of things. So, I just love that you and I are so in tune with the training that, you know, even with my machine and your methods, we are still on the same page with the results and what we do is, no, I am there. There isn't really a question that,
Okay. This has been an absolute pleasure, and I will look forward to posting it first on YouTube and then eventually on Buzzsprout, on podcasts, it'll be on Apple Podcasts and all that good stuff. So what I'll ask you to do is send me any information so I can include contact info and things like that, websites, emails, whatever you feel people need to know. And with that, I will thank you very much for your time, and hang on a bit. I'll be right back.